Neighbor. You're just in time. The coffee's ready.
Perfect. Well, that smells good. What type of coffee is it?
Well, it's only the best Starbucks beans. Freshly ground from my French press Bodum here.
We used to use the Bodum. Too bad you have to grind your own beans. Our semi-automatic espresso machine grinds the coffee for us. Anyway, I came here to bring this box along. I thought before I threw some of this stuff out, it's not much use to me, but I thought, you know, maybe you could use it.
Well, what do you have in there?
Actually, I've got a trip down memory lane. Got a memory stick here, 256K. Used to think you could store all your data on this.
You know what? I don't think we have a need for that. I couldn't even store one photo on that. And anyways, we just load all our data up to the cloud now.
That's a good idea. That's probably something Clarence Martins would do, too. Anyway, I remember when you still had a desktop computer and I had moved on to a lightweight Ultrabook.
I'm past that. I don't carry a laptop anymore. I just use my tablet wherever I go.
Oh. Well, anyway, what else do I have in here? Let's see. Well, how about this? I mean, I don't know if you need any more phones. This is a corded phone. All the ones in our home are cordless. It makes it more portable for us.
You know what? I don't have any use for a corded phone anymore. We actually don't even have a home phone service anymore. We just have a family cell phone plan. We all have our own cell phones. Free calls between family members, wherever, whenever.
That's also a good thing. I bet you don't have. Oh, not this one. Hold on. I bet you don't have an Apple 4S. You might have phones, but I bet you don't have an Apple 4S. Eh?
Well, you're definitely right on that one because we all have iPhone 6s.
Oh.
High definition
cool.
Screens.
Yeah.
8-megapixel eyesight camera on the front and the back. You know what? I just have to think now, and my messages get sent.
Well, that's why your messages are blank. Anyway, look at this. Check this out.
Is that one of those new iPhone watches? Where did you get that? They're not even out yet.
It's a beta model. I have connections through work, our manufacturers. Got myself this beta model. You know what's really cool is it's keyless entry to your car. Just swipe it and tap here. It even gives you GPS directions and vibrates. Cool, eh?
Well, actually, kind of glad you're buying all those Apple products because we have lots of shares in the company.
Oh.
How many do you guys have?
Actually, I didn't buy Apple. They're doing well, aren't they? Those Apple stocks. My investments seem to tank. I seem to do wrong with my investments. I don't know. I think I should have checked, get Ron or Nola to get me hooked up with a good financial advisor. Anyway, I'm really not doing very well investment-wise.
Well, that's too bad. I guess there's no early retirement for you. With all our investment earnings, we just finished building an energy-efficient vacation property on Maui with the help of Doug Rempel.
Oh. Anyway, Karen, I think it's time for me to go.
Oh, here's your memory stick.
Yeah. Anyway, chatting with you makes me feel poor. I think I better go. Thanks for coffee, I guess.
Yeah, well, thanks for trying to dump your junk on me.
I'm the first to confess that I want things, and it's part of my weakness. I want to say a prayer with you, but it's a prayer that is different from the prayer that we usually say in churches, and it should be up there right now. So, other than the happy pictures that we see, the next slide. It's a prayer that I need you to help me with a little bit of action. I know I'm not going to embarrass you. Let me say that, you know, to begin with. I want you to sort of stretch out your hands like that. And just keep it for a little bit. I know if you don't want to do it, that's okay. So if we can say this together, it's a simple prayer, and we can pray this as a community of believers. Everything comes from God. Everything belongs to God. Everything is distributed by God. Let's do it one more time. Everything comes from God. Everything belongs to God. Everything is distributed by God. Amen. Thank you. Exodus 20, verse 17, goes like this. I'm reading this again for you. You must not covet your neighbor's house. You must not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female servant, ox or donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. This is the last Sunday today that we dig into the text in Exodus 20. We've been spending pretty much the last almost 2 months going through this. We call this the Ten Invitations because the passage carries a lot of connotations. Now, people from inside or outside of the church often have very loaded opinions about this passage. As followers of Jesus, we know it so well, so it's easy for us to hit the fast forward button. We just coast through it. If you are not a church goer on a regular basis, outsiders, you often will look at this Ten Commandments, this passage, as flag bearers of Christian legalism, which means if you're not part of the church, you often will see this passage as a list of bullet points that is outdated, politically incorrect, and irrelevant. Nobody likes the Ten Commandments. Who wants to be told what to do? Now, of course, we can also look at the Ten Commandments as a moral compass. We look at it as something that guides us in decision making. But meanwhile, we also acknowledge that we do not need to be a Christian believer, a follower of Jesus, to know that lying, stealing, killing, having an affair, swearing, and not honoring your parents are wrong, right? We grow up learning not to do them. Not to do them. We don't have to be Christians to know this is not something that we should not do. And chances are, and you can tell me, that you have friends, that I have friends, they don't go to church, they don't believe in God, and they're just as good as we are in observing these regulations. So in a sense, when we talk about the Ten Commandments, when we address the Ten Commandments here in the church, we're not just talking about the behaviors. We are talking about something deeper. Because most of us, we have the willpower to overcome a bad habit or a bad sin. Well, if there's such thing called bad sin or good sin. Overcome a bad habit or sin in a temporary sense. If you're into sort of life coaching, there's a website called coach.me. I don't know if you've ever been to it. This is a website that's dedicated on creating an online community to help people to stay on track. Stay on track of what? Stay on track of whether to sustain a healthy habit, like eating well or eating vegetables, you know, every day, something as simple as that. Or getting rid of bad ones, cheating, lying, drinking, things like that. So there's this online community now. You can actually sign up with your email, and you can actually meet people online and be accountable to them. We can get rid of the actions via the help of online relationships. But I think we should look a little deeper than behaviors. If you look deeper into the chapter, Exodus 20, or if you look at the parallel passage in Deuteronomy 5, then we begin to get a taste of the true fragrance of this text. We see this more than just a set of rules or regulations. Now, it may sound like a framework of ethical system, a framework helping us to do or to not do something, or then rationales behind it. But essentially, the Ten Commandments is a love letter from God. I don't know if you ever thought about this. The Ten Commandments is actually a love letter from God. The Lord gives us commands because He knows how easy it is for us to get out, venture out of His love, get into the cold, drift away slowly from Him. So the Ten Commandments is essential because it reminds us two things. The first thing is this. We know, you know it. We love God. The second is, we love by God. Ten Commandments teaches us that we love God, reminds us that we love God, but also we are loved by God. And perhaps this is why we looked at the Ten Commandments as imitations, because they call us to the matter of the heart. God is interested in our actions. God is interested in our hearts too. For Him, there's no separation in between the two. This is not like actions and heart, they're, you know, two separate entities. There's no separation in the inner world and the outer world. There's no separation in with the cognitive and the behavior. We are created as holistic beings, and we are redeemed as holistic beings. Today's text is pretty simple, right? You know it. We shall not covet other people's things. Now, this is a little bit further down from verse 15, where we were told simply not to steal things from other people. Now, none of us will wake up all of a sudden and go, well, we should start buying or grabbing things from the store, taking things from other people, right? It all began somewhere else. The word covet in verse 17 can also translate it as lust. We covet others' possessions. We lust over other people's things. Now, for our discussion today, it is important to differentiate the two terms here, envy and jealousy. They sound similar. They are connected at a behavioral level, but there's a difference when you look deeper into the heart of these two terms, envy and jealousy. Let me illustrate. Jealousy. Jealousy is this. It is over what I currently have or possess. So, for example, if I have lunch a lot with a female colleague at work, I think Phoebe will get jealous very quickly. She's not here, so I cannot make fun of her. She's downstairs. I was thinking she's going to be here so I can actually see her reaction, but I didn't. So if I have lunch with a female colleague a lot, say once or twice a week, then Phoebe's going to start thinking, hey, what's going on? She will get jealous of me. Now, she is jealous, and she has the right to do so, because another person is getting my attention way too much. We deserve one another's attention fully. Jealous. You remember Moses telling the Israelites that we should not have other gods, because God is a jealous God, right? Deuteronomy 6, 14, 15. Our God is jealous. We often go like, what do you mean, right? Why is our God jealous? Our God is jealous when we give to others what is rightfully His. Our love. When we drift away from loving the person that we're supposed to love, then the person who we're supposed to love will get jealous. That's jealousy. That's more of a, if I can say, more of a positive thing. What about envy? Envy, on the other hand, is about wanting what other people have. Wanting something that you do not have that belongs to others. It's about lusting on something that I do not have rightful ownership of. And that was illustrated really well in our skit. So being envious is wanting the bigger house that my brother has. Wanting a new iPhone when I just got an iPhone 2 weeks ago. Being envious is about wanting something that is not supposed to be mine. Drooling over a relationship that belongs to somebody else. We become envious because we are not satisfied with what we have. And at the moment, we see somebody has it, and guess what? We go after it as individuals. We go after it. We go after that person. whether figuratively we go after that or literally we go after that. Now, this relentless pursuit is seen in stories that we're familiar with. We remember after he asked the crowd their choice of releasing Barabbas or Jesus. Scripture tells us the Roman ruler, Pilate, what did he say? He knew the righteous leaders arrested Jesus out of envy. Matthew 27. Pilate knows these people were jealous of Jesus, of Jesus, and they arrested him. I think Thomas Aquinas says it really well over 750 years ago. Envy is sorrow over another's good. Sorrow over another's good. Exodus 20 is about the sin of envy. It is pervasive. And we live in a world embedded in a consumer culture of envy. I don't have to tell you that. Sometimes the needs that we have are dictated by TV commercials, internet sidebar messages, and flyers, right? We don't know what we need until we see them. Then they tell us what we need. You study marketing, you know what I mean. We create demand, and we fulfill it by delivering. Of course, the trick is to maintain this in very short intervals so customers can come back and buy it and buy it and buy it again as we ask them to. Now, none of us need to go to school and learn what it means to desire something. We don't have to learn that. I take my kids to Toys R Us. Guess what they do? Well, the moment we walk into Toys R Us, now you know my two kids, they're pretty clingy for the most part. And when Phoebe and I walk into Toys R Us, because sometimes they have sales, and we walk in and we tell them, you know, we do not buy everything in there. We just buy things that mommy and daddy needs to buy. And of course, they don't listen to us, right? So, you know, when we walk into strange places, most of the time they hold on to our hands. They don't let go, right? You walk into Toys R Us, guess what happened? The moment we step into the building, they let go of our hands and they run, right? I'm sure you understand what I mean. We don't have to be told what it means to desire something. Envy appears a lot in the Bible. You remember Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Rachel and Leah, Joseph and his brothers, David and his king, King Saul, and of course, Judas, the disciple of Jesus. Now for us adults in Vancouver in 2015, the act of desiring takes on different forms, various forms. We can daydream about a new lifestyle in details if we win the lottery. Even though if we don't buy the lottery, we still think about it. We relive unrealistic dreams of a broken relationship, looking for something that does not exist, projecting ourselves onto someone else's shoes. What if that is me? What if that person is me? What would I do? Our behaviors are sometimes minimal, but our thoughts can run wild. How do we deal with envy? Right? What do we do with it if we have it in our system? How do we deal with it? And what do we do when we find our envious desires driving our cars, telling us where to go, what to do? Now, the typical reaction would be in the form of control or elimination. Problem is, there are three issues. Number one, our envious desires cannot be extinguished entirely. A lot of teachings in various religious traditions would tell us that we need to suppress our desires so we can be better, right? Including evangelical Christianity. We're told that, oh, you know, just press it down, right? Put the lid on and make sure you tie it up so, you know, it doesn't explode, right? Keep it inside. Even in the early church, we had the Desert Fathers, and they would do these drastic things to reduce and renounce their desires in order to be closer to God. They would punish themselves for having desires to a point where nothing in life was present. Nothing is enjoyable, which contradicts the desires that God has for us, enjoying the provisions, which we addressed a few months back. Our desires cannot be extinguished entirely. But also, beyond that, our envy. Envy is actually contagious. All desire is imitative. Now, like I said earlier, none of us go to school and take envy 101 in our classes. We learn about desiring by observing other people. We're being copycats. We want it because somebody else has it. So we want it, because otherwise we wouldn't have known. So unless we live under a rock with no Wi-Fi signals, it's impossible to avoid these, what I call, desire attacks. They're everywhere. It's contagious. It's impossible to avoid. They are imitative. We copy people. We see people. The third issue with the fact that we're not able to control or eliminate our desires is it goes a lot deeper than just attaining material goods. We're not just talking about a form of, you know, worldly possessions. We're not talking about the new iWatch. We're not talking about a new coffee maker. We're talking about something that is intangible. Envious desires come in the form of reputations, approvals, relationships. And sometimes they come from the fact that we aren't happy with who we are, so we want to be somebody else instead of ourselves. And the greatest crime that we do to ourselves is pretending that we are somebody else. The image that we create for ourselves, the image that we refresh and recycle in our lives, and the image that we think is our home. In the 1980s, there was I don't know if you are a Polish background here, but there was a series of short films called The Decalogue, and it's made by the great Polish director, Krzysztof Kieślowski. How many of you have seen this? Some of you. It's beautiful. It's great. In the last film of the series, I mean, it's on YouTube, so now it's kind of free if you want to watch it. It's pretty long. It's an hour each, and there are 10 short films, so we're talking about 10 hours. That's quite a bit. In the last film of the series, titled Thou Shalt Not Covet Thy Neighbor's Goods, the story is about two brothers discovering a very expensive set of stamps after the father died, and they were not very close to the father. So their father died, and they after the funeral, they walk into their father's apartment and trying to figure out what possessions their father had. So the two brothers walk in and realize, oh, that's a really expensive set of stamps that they can sell. The problem was the whole set was missing one stamp. So guess what they did? They took it to a local store, and they asked, how much it would cost, and the owner of that store happened to have the missing one. So the owner agreed to sell this missing stamp to the brothers, but there was one condition. He was not asking for money. He was asking for one of the brothers' kidney, because his daughter had kidney disease, and he wanted a brother to donate one of his kidneys to his daughter. So long story short, somehow the older brother had a kidney that matches the blood type of this daughter, and so they had the surgery. And while the older brother was at the hospital recovering from the surgery, his younger brother came to him and said, the apartment that their father lived was broken into. And guess what was missing? The whole set of the stamps. The whole set was missing. And the brothers started to suspect one another. The brother who was in the hospital thought, you must be, you staged a robbery so you can actually reap the profits from our late father's possession. And the younger brother thought maybe it was the older brother who hired somebody so he can pretend that he was innocent. So they started to suspect one another, and interestingly, they both reported the other to the police separately. Now, I'm not going to tell you the end of the... I'm not going to give you the spoiler. I purposely do that. You have to go and read and see the film. I'm not going to spoil you. You can watch it on YouTube. But let me tell you the point of the story. in the end, there was a good ending. The point of the story is, we can sometimes get caught so deeply into things that we actually don't own. The stems were not theirs to begin with. And they were fighting, suspecting each other to a point that they had to report to each other, to the police. We got caught up in things that we don't actually own. But delusion tricks us into thinking that we have the right to these things. It's mine. It is supposed to be mine. We have the right to these things, these images, these relationships. We are captivated, we are captured, and we are kidnapped. I like the way that the great American philosopher or ethicist, Stanley Howers, that's the way he puts it. We are created to love God, but when love is misdirected, life degenerates into a jumble of disordered desires. We have love, but when it's misdirected, what happens? Our lives degenerate into a jumble of disordered desires. Have you ever felt restless when everything is going so well in your life? And you go to bed, you go, something's not right. I'm restless. You know, the worst thing about it is when we fulfill and follow our desires, our envious desires, we fulfill them. And guess what? We realize after we've fulfilled most of them, and all of them, then we are far from being content. We're not happy. It bothers us. Even though we have all the things that we wanted. We have that house, we have that new phone, we have that watch, we have that relationship. We're not happy. And it's not about, let's try to fill that hole again and again and again. It's not a black hole that we're talking about. In fact, it's quite the opposite. When we try to follow our envious desires, we are actually putting the wrong pack into a square hole. We put a wrong peg into a square hole. Hope you can see this picture a little bit better. And there's space left behind, right? So guess what we do? We're not happy because we put that wrong peg into the square hole and we take it out because there's space. And we go, we want to fit that. We want to find something that would perfectly fit into that square hole. And we put the wrong peg into it again and we take it out and we put it into it again. On and on and on. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me explain. The desires we have will never go away. You know that. They will always remain as long as we are alive. They're in the form of material goods, recognitions, whatever that is. And to a certain extent, we do center our lives by the fulfillment of desires, which is true. And this is a repetitive exercise. As we know, our desires will never be 100% fulfilled. We keep on doing it again and again and again. And when we look deeper, we realize we're not looking at desires. We are looking at one desire, not many desires. And that desire is the longing that only God can fulfill. We look at much more than just different things that we want. Because we want that to fill that square hole. But we keep putting the wrong peg into the square hole. Until one day we go, guess what? This is the wrong thing. We actually need to fill a square peg into a square hole. And that can only be done by God. Of course, we can keep on feeding our longings, but until the longing is satisfied, then we will always be restless. We can keep on doing that, but until we know that we need to put the square peg into a square hole. What if one day we discover that we don't have to do this round peg square hole thing anymore? That God actually will satisfy and has already satisfied the deepest need that we have. That all we ever need, not wanted, all we ever need is from God. Remember we prayed that prayer in the beginning? Everything comes from God. Everything belongs to God. And everything is distributed by God. I wish I can say that I've overcome all these things, but I haven't. But guess what? I walked many days, years, in a sense that I wasted a lot of my time by looking for the wrong thing. I said earlier, I'm not the most perfect individual that can preach that message. And I couldn't tell you how many kilometers of detours I went through, looking for things that are wrong and trying to fit that into the square hole. I have my stories. You probably have yours. And I have to admit, I have not discovered this truth until quite late into my life. And I feel sad that the time that I wasted by keep doing what I thought was right, longing for things, being envious about stuff that I'm not supposed to be envious about. The truth is, we will never be able to rest and be content until we rest in the love of God. And we will continue our journey of pursuing things and being envious until we sit down at the feet of God and say, Lord, I'm tired. I want to rest. Can you fill me with your love? Paul tells us in Philippians 4, the whole book of Philippians talk about contentment, but we're not preaching on it, so I won't get into it. He did say, Paul said, until we acknowledge the love of Christ is the only one and only source of contentment, we will never be able to rest. So what is it that we go after in our journeys? Perhaps we are tired and we want to rest. And Jesus has an invitation for us, and that is to come. So think of the Ten Commandments as invitations. They invite us to live fuller lives, fuller not measuring in accumulation of things or frequencies of euphoric moments. When we are full in Christ, we move into a deep state of contentment. When we're in love with God, then the rest of the world means very little to us, because we know He has already taken care of us long before we know what our needs are. I want to share a song with you as we close, and this will be our closing song. And it's called I Shall Not Want. And my invitation for you is to look at the lyrics and perhaps use that song as a prayer for yourself as you meditate through the song. And then towards the end of the song, I would ask Clarence to come up and close our service.